Jonas singing in the rain to not only talk about his own work, but to sort of represent that darkening that happened in American cinema after World War II. And he was just hilarious and very famously sparky and slightly narky. And he was fantastic fun. I said to him at one point, I said, your film, Two for the Road, is very moving. And he said, that's not a question. And I said, is your film Two for the Road very moving? And he said, that's a question. So he was great. You know, and look at him, you know, he had made, I think I mentioned in here that he made all these films for his time, he was 40-something. That was a real highlight for me. Yusuf Shaheen, that I mentioned, this fantastic pioneering filmmaker, was great. A lot of them do the landscape, being in Calcutta before dawn, just walking around, unforgettable. You know, filming at the Hollywood sign at dusk as it gets cool at the end of the day, the sign bangs, and crows hit into it, you know, and you hear these voices from LAPD saying, please move away from the sign, down the hill where you will be arrested. It's the atmosphere, the sense, there's a lot of wanderlust in this, I think, particularly this bit, we really travel here. I don't know what other piece of work would have taken around the world.
This colossal project is only filmed at the day. I'm just curious your process of putting this all out.
So this is it here.
When you go to a subject area like Blacklist film, why do you choose one or two of those, or how do you choose just only two?
It's so difficult, you know, and sometimes when you're dealing with massive types of cinema, and you just have to choose one or two that's representative, you know, and it was a very hard choice, you know, and it was painful. We cut 3 hours out of this, unbelievably, it was much longer, you know, and we had to shrink things down and try to represent examples. Therefore, I was really pleased when I realized that I could use something like The Third Man to summarize a certain period in cinema, or I could use the year 1939 to look at certain questions of escapism in world cinema. You know, but I did use these grids. There's this one, which you've just seen. By the way, you are there. So that's not too bad. My favorite film of all time, probably the film that I've watched more than any other, is Billy Wilder's film, The Apartment. And it made one tiny brief appearance, and that's it. You know, so I'm angry with myself as well for that. Any other comments or thoughts?
Well, it begs the question, why is The Apartment your favorite?
I just think it captures the joys and sorrows of being alive so beautifully. You know, I think it's about loneliness, and I think cinema's very good at loneliness. Jack Lemmon sitting on a park bench with the winds blowing one evening, you know, the beauty of Shirley MacLaine, that last line, that grace note, shut up and deal, you know, the music, that so gorgeous, you know, and there's something, there's a joyous melancholia about it, which I really like. Any other thoughts or comments?
Is Canada a national film, or
absolutely. Either tomorrow, Canada features in Canada. I'm not here to say what role Canada plays, but it's tomorrow or the next day. Canada comes quite strongly. Norman McLaren's there, of course, you know, as central, but other Canadian filmmakers too, as you'll see if you say.
As I was watching today and yesterday, I was wondering how conscious were filmmakers at the time that they were, of what they were doing, apart from just telling a good story. I mean, you were able to do this analysis in retrospect.
Yeah.
To see a movement,
yeah.
And ideas. But how self-conscious was that?
Well, it's a very good question. You know, some filmmakers, famously John Ford, Howard Hawks, the old-timers, say, not at all, you know. But if you sit with filmmakers, they're often talking about other filmmakers' work. They're always looking to steal ideas. And so this idea that, you know, there's this famous book called The Anxiety of Influence. And I think influence does create an anxiety in an artist and a filmmaker. You know, they're sort of scared to acknowledge that they might have got an idea from somewhere else, but at the same time, they're desperate to refresh their own ideas, you know? So I think all these filmmakers, John Ford, you know, so many people were looking at John Ford films, and he was looking at Griffith all the time and copying exactly. There's a scene in Yesterday, you remember, throughout the nation, where the mother's arms come out, that appears exactly in John Ford's work, exactly the same scene. So whether they just absorb, you know, sometimes your friend says something, and then you use that idea the next day, and you forgot where you got it from. I think there's a lot of that.
Yeah, but how about their criticism of the period, or their absorbing of the particular period? Like, I have a feeling that Douglas Sirk, when
extremely political, extremely analytical man. You know, I never met Sirk, but I know people who knew him, and they said he knew exactly what he was doing with that famous moment with the TV screen. He knew exactly that that was a metaphor for the times she was being imprisoned. He was an intellectual, came from an intellectual background. King Vidor was very good at articulating what he was doing in the 20s. Some of them just were working more instinctively. And of course, come modernity, which we're not at yet, really, in this story of film, come modernity, where everybody went through film schools and the movie brat generation came along, then they were much better at they're much more self-conscious, better at positioning themselves in the story of film.
Isn't that the thing that any artist thinks?
Yeah.
That's how we're born.
Absolutely. That moment of coming of modernity, the kind of Greenberg and people write about, suddenly it gives people a new language to help them express what they might be doing anyway. But tomorrow we see these incredible moments, like famous woman Persona, where the film breaks down, etc. And these are the key moments when film became self-conscious. You know, we haven't quite got there yet.
Yes, I appreciate the extraordinarily rich canvas that you presented. I wonder somewhere, though, if you deal with things like, I mean, the famous confrontation of Orson Welles with RKO over the Magnificent Ambersons, you know, the studio versus the director's vision. Of course, they rebought that film.
I don't deal directly with that. I love Ambersons. You know, it's after Touch of Evil is probably my favorite Orson Welles, so how painful it is that Ambersons is not in Europe at all. What I have tried to do is look at, as you've seen already, the way the Japanese system was director-led, whereas the American system. So to that extent, it's there, but I haven't gone into that kind of clash because I've tried to stick to questions of what's actually on screen, as you can see, you know, it's me gabbering over films, basically, you know, so try not to look at sort of industrial elements as about too much, unless they pertain to the language of film, but definitely I would love to go into that. Any other comments or questions?
I don't know so much.
How did I start this?
What's your background?
Yeah. So my background, I was obsessed by film since being a little boy. I just loved it, hoovered it all up, watched late night TV, saw loads of movies, studied film history, art history, philosophy, and became a film critic kind of guy, and then a wannabe filmmaker, a very amateur, not very accomplished filmmaker for a long time. However, I kept sucking in information about movies. Started to run film festivals. I was director of Edinburgh Film Festival, which is the oldest film festival in the world. I started working with Tilda Swinton. She and I did these little micro pop-up festivals of unusual variety. So when you run festivals, you get a head full of stuff. I proposed in a London newspaper that there should be a book on film, like E.H. Gombrich's famous book on the story of art. I said it should be called The Story of Film. My partner Jill and I, we drove to India from Scotland. When we came back, there was a letter saying, why don't you write that book, The Story of Film? So I gave it a go. I wrote the book, and out of that came this.
I think I found a reference in here to Forsyth, but the first thing Scottish is mentioned.
Yeah, there's even more Scottish cinema coming up. We'll get to Bill Douglas, the greatest Scottish filmmaker, and there's a bit of Bill Forsyth coming up as well. And Bill Forsyth's also good at Jacques Tati. Tomorrow, so there's a bit of that, you know, but probably not enough.
I know you don't have any major funders, so I'm just curious, how did you work out arrangements to get clips?
Clips, we used, we didn't pay for any of the clips, because there's now just like a scholar writing about literature is allowed to quote a small amount of a poem, so there's a law called Fair Dealing, Fair Use in here in North America, where you can use, as long as you're not distorting the clip or messing around with it or using it for your own commercial gain, and we're not going to make any money out of this, but then you're allowed to use a small extract.
How long ago?
It doesn't specify. Mm-hmm. It's more the spirit of it. You know, as you can see, not once am I sort of, we never distort the image or the sound, you know, so we're true to the original artist's intention. The film will say who owns the film on it, and so we're not sort of stealing in that way.
Is that within American law?
It's a law in many countries all over Europe, in America and Canada and lots of places. And it's a sort of subtle and changing field, but you know, you can see that this is done with sincere honor intention.
sued you yet.
But you know what? We have lawyers, and the lawyers look at this, and it's more common practice now. Yes.
Hi, I'm wondering when you were making this, who did you have in mind to target audience?
I never think of that, to be honest. You know, I knew what I didn't want to do, which was use jargon. So hopefully there's no jargon in this. I suppose I thought if there was a target audience, it was me, age 16, sitting at home in Belfast, being desperate to see cinema. And it took me, I'd say I fell in love with cinema at 11. It probably took me at least 10 years, maybe 15 years, to see my first African film. The African cinema is superb, and boy, is there a lot of it tomorrow. We're going to see the glories of African cinema tomorrow. And I didn't see that for 15 years. That is absolute disgrace, and the whole culture should take responsibility for that. The TV stations, the film magazines, the radio programs about cinema, everything, you know. And so I want that to happen. I want young people, or people of 105, to be able to see great African films, you know, as well as everything else.
What are your hopes for this film? Like, once it's completed, what would you hope that it?
I almost see myself, don't take this, but I see myself as like a drug pusher. I want to say, try this. People really like this African cinema. Iran's coming, not tomorrow, but the day after, the Iranian cinema's coming along, and there's like 30 minutes on Iranian cinema, which is probably my favourite. And so I just want to get people, it's an attempt at seduction, I would say. You know, you want people to think, wow, that is beautiful.
The exposure after this, like...
So we hope it's playing in UK TV at the moment. It started 2 weeks ago, Saturday nights, peak time, which is very good. It'll come out in DVD. We've had loads of requests to play it in institutes, universities, galleries, etc. We are thinking it's getting a theatrical release on the big screen in the UK. We've got a sales agent here, and we're hoping that somebody in Canada would like to buy it for TV or for big screen, or show it in a place like this, or wherever, you know, any opportunity.
In the course of making it, were there any films that you discovered or rediscovered that you had not seen or
yes.
had appreciated before?
Well, writing the book was a crucial. There's a film coming tomorrow, I think, called Harvest 3,000 Years, made in Ethiopia. I remember so clearly looking at the map and thinking, what countries do I not know about cinema from? I looked at Ethiopia and I thought, I haven't seen a single Ethiopian film. So I researched, and it's like knowing what you don't know, you know, and I knew that I didn't know about Ethiopian cinema. I found this film by Haile Gerima called Harvest 3,000 Years, a masterpiece. So I completely discovered that. Also, I'm ashamed to say that there's a great film from Senegal, this is a great modern film of West Africa called Tuki Buki. I had not seen it until I wrote my book. For the film, by that stage the book was a kind of research process for the film, so there was less of a sense of discovery in the film, because, you know, I'd done it all, I'd done as much as I could. One more question. You've already asked one.